Here is the most played out statement in running. Runners need to strength train. I'm sure you heard it and you might do it, but how the hell do you even do it right? And what is even right? In this episode, I'm gonna go deeper than normal. I usually go pretty deep and squash all myths about run strength training with the help of a medical sports professional. We'll clear up all the confusing stuff while giving you five body weight only run specific strength training workouts for you to do right now in your house with no equipment. If you're more advanced than a gym rat, you can still make these harder and more challenging with weights and resistance, and we'll tell you how to do that. We will touch on exactly the five exercises: Bulgarian split squat, single leg deadlift, bent knee calf raise, push-ups, and side plank with leg raise, what they actually are, the science behind them, why they are so important, how to actually do them, and example sets. Oh, why should you believe me and who am I? Well, I'm Darren D. Lake Runs. I've been running since 1994. I'm a 3-hour marathon runner and a 10-hour Ironman triathlon finisher, and still trying to get sub 16 minutes in the 5K. Still trying, TBD on that. And since 2012, I've been researching, experimenting, and talking to experts on how to get 1% better each day in my training, racing, and life, all to make it that much simpler and easier for you. I'll be joined by Sam Shearman, a Sydney-based physio slash physical therapist who specializes in running related injuries. She holds first class honors degree in exercise and sports science and a master's of physiotherapy. Her experience spans various settings, including sports clubs and institutes. She also developed the 10W2S 10 Weeks to Strength for Runners app, which is so dope and simple and one of the best strength training apps for all types of runners that I think, and is passionate about helping runners manage their training and their injuries. Last, if you're listening via audio only, please make sure to have a look at the links in the show notes, specifically the episode website, because in our convo, Sam goes into super detail about a lot of things like how to do strength training movements, body position, etc., and having a visual alongside of these concepts will help you understand it much better. Enough from me. Let's go. So let's go with number one, Bulgarian split squat. And tell me what it is, and then we'll get into a couple more things.
So a Bulgarian split squat is a rear foot elevated split squat. I quite like this exercise because it helps us work with a single leg stand, so building single leg strength. And we can particularly target the glutes and quadriceps with this one. So it's almost replicating the demands of running. And you can get a lot of load through that front leg without equipment.
Why do you think it's so important for runners especially to do this?
Once again, it replicates the demands of running. We have one leg in extension, which is essentially giving your hip flexors a stretch. And the forward leg, we want to train in single leg stance, again, replicating what we do when we actually run. Thirdly, I do think it's an excellent way to target some of the key muscle groups. So glutes, quads, and you can make it as hard as you want to make it.
Yeah. Would you say when you get better, you can start adding resistance, so adding weights?
Absolutely.
Dumbbells?
Dumbbells, barbells, depending on how heavy you want to go. Or if you haven't got any weights, you can just increase the time at the depth of the squat to turn into a bit of an isometric exercise. I've also, as a add-on, you can even do bent knee calf raises in that position. So you're getting the isometric contraction through your quads, through your glutes. May as well work the calves at the same time.
Yeah, that's a rough one, yeah. And going slow down, eccentric.
Correct. An isometric is when you're holding a muscle contraction but not moving the joint through range. So you're basically just sitting in that depth of the squat, holding it, muscles are working, and then if you wanted to, lift the heel up, start doing some calf raises.
All right, so how do you do it?
So essentially, I start sitting down on a bench with both feet, knees at 90 degrees. If you extend the forward knee, heel on the ground, and then stand up, it means the forward leg is in the correct position and you can take the back leg onto the back of a bench or a chair. From this position, you lower down into the squat. Now, ideally, we want to have that front knee around 90 degrees. It gives a bit of space at the knee joint. However, you can make it more quad dominant if you bring that front leg further towards you, or you can make it more glute dominant by bringing the front leg further away.
Wow, it sounds like a super versatile.
Yeah, there's a lot you can do with it, hence why I love it for runners.
Yeah. I realized that I was doing my split squat, which is different than a lunge. I was doing lunges, and then I realized if I put my leg forward, it was a totally different exercise.
Yeah,
I guess if I
or I put, sorry, I put, I had it so that my knee was over my foot.
Yeah.
There we go.
And
yeah.
That's not a bad thing because traditionally everyone's like, oh, don't put your knees over your toes. As with anything, you need to build into different exercises gradually, but it's an excellent way to get some quad strength in.
Nice. All right. So what are some, let's go inverse, which is opposite. So what are some ways that people can do this wrong?
It's usually when the foot is too close to the bench, because usually when I'm demonstrating this exercise to patients, they likely haven't done it before. So it's quite an awkward, uncomfortable position if your front foot is too close to the bench. You want to be starting out with that, you know, 90-degree angle at the knee. I don't think of any other errors I tend to see. Oh, it could be due with the upper body too. Like sometimes people are leaning way too forward or looking at the ground. You want to have your chest up, you know, nice and tall, slight angle at the hips. And are looking forward as always, trusting yourself, not, you know, worrying that what your supporting leg is doing. It is going to sway around a little bit, particularly if you're not used to the exercise. But put trust in your body. It will get better.
All right. If you were to rank this of the five that we have as like, let's say someone only has time to do one exercise, where would you rank this in 1 through 5?
Number one. Yeah. Because we're getting our calves too. So it's clearing, like, I mean, you know, most of our lower limb muscle groups, you know, particularly quads, glutes, calves, you can get a lot of bang for your buck with this one.
Look, I honestly did like, I know a lot. And then I see you on Instagram or you do something, I go, oh, that's another one. I didn't know about that. Like as far as strength exercises, plyometrics, form drills, all these different things. And, it's funny. I want to do more of these. I just don't have it in my brain arsenal.
Yes.
Like, or just, like, you know, you just have like 5 or 6 things that you just go to. But I do these every few weeks. And I'm always like, why don't I do more? And now knowing that it's your number one, definitely going to incorporate this
And more. I quite like that back leg being in hip extension too, because runners need to have good hip extension. I mean, we need good single leg strength. So there's two things, you know, kill two birds with one stone.
All right. The second one, single leg deadlift, which... it's very different than the Bulgarian split squat because I hear single leg deadlift and I'm like, oh, it's the same. So what is it exactly?
So if you can picture a traditional deadlift where you get that hip hinge and slight bend through the knee as you go into the depth of the movement, this is performing the exercise on one leg. For this reason, it helps to improve our single leg and our hip stability using muscle groups that wouldn't be worked in a traditional deadlift. It also helps with some stability too. There's a lot of movement happening around the knee and the hip, and if you can control those muscle groups, it means you can better control yourself when you're actually running.
Why should you do this? What's the like core benefits?
I would say to do it as part of a stability exercise. So a lot of runners lack a bit of strength in their glutes, and there's more to the glutes than just the max, medius, and minimus. You've got your deep hip external rotators too, so they're the one little ones that help keep the ball in the ball and socket, which is your hip joint. You can also do it for posterior chain strength, so a lot of hamstring work in this one, and hamstrings are important for the push-off at the end of your stance phase in running.
Can you explain just a bit of definition? What is the posterior chain?
So posterior chain is all the muscles that run along the back of the body. So this helps targets the core, but particularly the, you know, erector spinae muscles, you know, your glute muscles, so glute max, hamstrings are posterior chain, and also your calves are posterior chain too. So anything that runs along your back.
Achilles?
Yeah, Achilles, posterior chain, yep.
Plantar?
Yep. Oh, no, that's probably, no, I wouldn't classify plantar fasciitis as a posterior chain.
Okay.
Maybe. I mean, it comes from the, like, you know, it's, I would say the Achilles tendon and the plantar fascia are one unit almost, but
yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I'd classify plantar fasciitis as a posterior chain. Anyway.
Okay. No, I'm very happy that
I could be wrong.
I can ask all these questions because there's so many questions to be asking. There'll be a lot more in depth of basically everything you need to know about strength training for running in the episode either before or after this. Mm-hmm. So make sure you listen to this. But let's get back to how to actually do this.
Okay, so with a single leg deadlift, you want to take one leg back. From this position, you start to hinge through the hips. And as you hinge through the hips, the body comes forward and you bend just slightly at the knee. You want to come so far forward that your face is almost horizontal to the ground. You also want to ensure there's no rotation through the pelvis. So a cue I give patients in the clinic is you can picture the two bony parts in front of your pelvis. Imagine there's flashlights on them and they're pointing directly down to the ground. You then hinge back up into the standing position to finish the first rep.
Sounds easy.
Yep. Yeah, it's harder than it looks.
Yeah, you make it sound so easy. All right. Inverse, how do people do this wrong? Because, yeah, fun story, true story from me. I do the normal two-leg deadlift. I know it's not really the two-leg, but, you know, the normal deadlift. Yeah. And I've pulled my lower back muscle probably about 4 or 5 times in the last few years due to improper form, thinking I could lift heavy and not being ready. So,
and I think that's the biggest issue. And sometimes it's just not form, but it's just going too much too soon with your lifting. So you could be lifting with a bad posture, but if you've been lifting with a bad posture for a while, then it's going to be a non-issue. But if you're lifting with, you know, one posture and then all of a sudden you're lifting that same weight with a different posture, then that's when an injury is going to occur. Mm. Our body adapts.
Yeah. Well, what's the – so I guess a bit more addition to that story. I ended up going to single leg deadlifts because – I was like, single leg is better for runners anyway.
Yeah.
And I was like, I won't get injured. Chance of getting injured because it's less weight and less load on my my spine and lower back and all that. I fell in love with them. I haven't gotten injured because of it. But I think I have pretty good form. But I've actually seen so many different variations of the single leg deadlift with weight. Mm-hmm. So I've gone up to weight because I need the resistance.
Yeah.
And the way we told you is to do them without body weight. This is a whole body weight workout, you know, how to. So how can people do it wrong when they start adding resistance to it? And I know resistance isn't just weight, but let's say they add weight to it. How can they do it wrong?
So a common one is they start flexing through their lumbar spine. So you want your lumbar spine, your back to be nice and straight. The movement comes from the hips. I often find that they perform the movement well until they get close to the ground and they try and reach that one little bit further, and then that's where they get their flexion. Flexion isn't a bad thing, but once again, we want to be doing this in a neutral posture, so we're, you know, loading up the structures in the same way each time we do the exercise. Additionally, we do see a lot of rotation through the hips. So as the hips go down, you go down towards the, I guess, facing the ground. The contralateral, so the hip on the other side of the leg that's working, will start to rotate upwards, and that is not going to load, I guess, in the plane we'd like it to. They're the two main things I see wrong with this exercise.
Right now is the part where I go, hey, if you're not feeling this, make sure you subscribe, rate, share it out with your friends about how amazing this is, rah, 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 rah. All right. While you should go out and do that anyway, how about I actually give you something that will help you? Is the running, health and fitness, and endurance sport internet too much sometimes? Is it too much conflicting content on how to train right? Or you just don't have time to read and watch the latest trends on how to, I don't know, carb cycle for your next marathon? Don't worry. I'll take care of that for you by showing you how to train, race, and live 1% better consistently. To do this, just sign up for my free newsletter, OPB. I figure out this whole 1% better thing so you don't have to by scouring the endurance sports deepest and darkest corners of the internet. Go to dlatecreates.com/news, all spelled the normal way, to be inspired and motivated on the regular. Let's get back into it.
Number three, bent knee calf raise. Tell me what it is.
Okay, so these are important for runners too. If you picture a traditional calf raise, the only change we do here is that we bend the standing knee. So essentially, we put one foot on a step, bend your knee. In this position, you then lift your heel up by moving the ankle only. So the knee needs to stay in the same degree of flexion throughout the entire movement. As you lower down, you allow the heel to drop below the depth of the step and then coming back up to recommence the next repetition.
All right, why is it important?
This one's super important for runners because it's targeting our soleus, which is our endurance calf muscle. So the soleus, it can take on up onto 6 to 8 times our body weight when running, and it needs to be able to do this over a prolonged period of time. So it's one of the key calf muscles we want to ensure that we can have an efficient stride and reduce injury through the Achilles tendon too.
Yeah, I've had a kind of a little asterisk. Let's double click on, I like saying double click. It's my new thing now. I'll probably say for the next few months. Let's double click on the, how do you say it? Soleus?
Soleus.
Soleus. American, I say soleus.
I noticed that.
Yeah, I think it's the same thing. It's like aluminium, aluminum, two different words. But yeah, I digress. I actually strain my soleus. Mm. It's so hard to say that. My soleus. Mm-hmm. Way back when I started training for Ironman, this is 2016, I was like putting on a whole lot of load, a lot of cycling, a lot of running, mm-hmm. and I was ramping it up way too fast. Mm-hmm. And I never experienced that. And I thought it was my calf. And then I had a physio. They were like, yeah, it's a soleus. I was like, what the hell is it? She's like, it's part of the
gastrocnemius.
Gastrocnemius, which is, everyone thinks that's the calf. It's just, the soleus is the... It's the thing along the, it's the muscle along the side, right?
Oh, no. It runs almost all the way down the length of your tibia, and the gastrocnemius sits quite literally over it.
That's the fat part.
Yeah.
The calf is the whole thing.
And the difference is the gastrocnemius crosses the knee joint. So when you're bending your knee in the bent knee calf raise, it takes the gastrocnemius off stretch, and then just the soleus is working.
Oh.
And the soleus doesn't cross the knee joint. It runs up and just sits there on the tibia at the top.
Got you. Yeah, and I learned the bent knee calf raise very quickly, and that it is for distance runners. It's the endurance. It's a slow twitch muscle, whereas I come from sprinting background, the 400, 800 meters, and I definitely have more fast twitch muscles.
Yes,
and I wasn't strengthening
that. The gastroc is more of the power one with this. Soleus is more of the endurance one.
Yeah, so I learned quickly what that was, and a lot of people don't do enough strengthening around this. And I guess another point that I want to add to that is when you do the bent knee calf raise, you also work the quad, right?
Correct. Yeah.
Right, so above the knee.
Kill two birds with one stone.
Yeah, which as runner's knee is one of the biggest issues that a lot of runners have. So it's a great one for that. So how do you do it?
So with a bent knee calf raise, you stand on the edge of a step, you bend your knee. Now the knee needs to stay in the same degree of flexion throughout the entire movement. From this position, you lift up your heel by flexing the ankle forwards. We call this plantar flexion. And then we lower the ankle back down below the height of the step. As we come up, that is the second repetition starting. But once again, that knee needs to stay the same throughout the entire movement. A common mistake I see is as people lift up, they lift their knee up as well to facilitate the movement, where it all just needs to come from the ankle.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I guess, inverse how to do it wrong. Going really deep and bending very low, do you get any more benefits out of it? Or
it gives you a greater eccentric range of motion, but you don't need to feel like you need to push down. Like once you feel like you've hit your range of motion, that's fine. Come back up.
Awesome. And actually, we should have talked about what would be like a workout for bent knee calf raises, and we can actually go back and...
Oh, like how many sets and reps?
Yeah,
what do you do?
For just general... Someone just, they run 2 to 3 times a week.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think starting off with a 3x12 rep range for your soleus bent knee calf raise is a good idea. I like to break things into fours. You could do 3x12, then down to 4x10 for another 4 weeks, and then you can go to perhaps 5x8 for another 4 weeks. So essentially you're reducing the rep range, you're increasing the load, and that's going to help, I guess, build strength in the tendon and the muscle itself over that time frame. If you haven't got any equipment at home, you can always, I tell some patients, put a bag, put some books in there and make it nice and heavy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Water bottles. Yeah. Number 4, push-ups. What is a push-up? I know everyone knows what a push-up is, but you know what? Let's just define it anyway.
Push-ups, when you're in a plank position, a high plank, you lower your body down to the ground through flexing your elbows, holding there and then pressing back up. It's an excellent core exercise. So people tend to forget about the core, throughout the push-up. They see it as traditional chest exercise. And when we do a push-up for runners, I prefer to have the elbows facing backwards towards your feet as opposed to out to the side. It's going to help... elicit more tricep action, which is more important for runners because it sort of replicates the arm swing that we go through.
All right, why is it important? Why should runners do it?
Well, runners need to work on upper body strength. It helps with posture, it helps with your arm swing, it even can help with breathing mechanics. So this is a great one because we are covering, a lot of key muscle groups. So it's a good, again, if you're time poor, push-ups are a great one to add in. And you can make them harder too. It's, again, without any equipment, you can start from your knees, you can go full length, you can even go put your feet on a chair, hands on the ground, lots of ways you can do a push-up.
Yeah, push-ups are definitely my favorite. I always gravitate to those things I'm good at, which is kind of bad. I'm like, I'm really good at push-ups, let me do more of them. And I probably should be doing other things. I should be doing Renegade Rows, which we'll get to another time.
I like them too.
Yeah, I know you said if we have weights, and we'll do weighted ones. Well, if Sam wants to come back on. We can do a whole lot of stuff. All right. How do you do the push-up? I know a lot of people, but this is how do you do it the right way?
Yeah. So you put your hands underneath your shoulders. You're starting in a high plank position. Again, we want our elbows facing backwards. You lower yourself down to the ground. If you want to make it harder, you stay in that position where you're just hovering above the ground just for a little bit longer, and then you press up. So another common mistake I see with push-ups, people fly through them so quickly, and we don't want to go too fast through these exercises because that's what we do with running. That's where we're stressing our tendons. Tendons best respond to slower, heavy, slow resistance work. So you want to make sure the time's nice and controlled as you go through the push-up.
Yeah, I was going to say, how do people do them wrong? And I think, would you say engaging, not engaging the core? And just
yes,
like,
that's another one. Yeah. So when you start to notice their lumbar spine dip down, that's another incorrect technique.
What's the lumbar spine?
Oh, the lumbar spine's the lower back. So you start to get that arch through your lower back, and that's your core not holding your body up to do the movement.
Got you.
Another one I see is if someone's doing it on their knees, they press their chest down to the ground, but they keep their hips high. You need to be in a plank position.
Got you. Yeah, that's a big one. Feet shoulder width apart, closer?
Hip width apart.
Does it matter?
If they're wider apart, it's easier for the core.
Oh, okay.
So you want to make it obviously relatively challenging. I just think have your feet in line with your hips.
But if your feet are together, it's harder for the core?
It makes it harder for the core.
Okay. Does it ruin
the
exercise?
I'm just thinking it makes it harder for the core, but it makes it less stable for the chest. So it depends what you want to do. Do you want it to be a stability exercise, or do you want to get the max amount of load through your chest? If you make it too unstable, it's actually harder to train the muscle.
Yeah.
But you can make it unstable to make it a different exercise.
Okay. Yeah, I've got like so many variations of push-ups.
Yeah.
The triangle, I've got arms really wide. I got arms far out, arms in, and it just changes it.
And I'm happy for runners to play around with that.
Okay. And 3x12 to start?
With push-ups. Yeah, it depends.
That's 3 sets by 12 reps.
Yeah, I think 3x12, but you need to make sure it's sufficiently challenging. So if you're cruising 3 or 12 reps, again, start finding ways how you can make this exercise harder, whether or not it's slowing down the tempo or doing a decline push-up, feet on the chair or bench. Something to make it a little bit harder. So, it's not going to be good enough if it's too easy to go through.
Yeah. Any of these to failure?
I tend to prefer less reps to failure simply because, once again, that's what we do with running. We're constantly, performing repetitive action through our tendons, and we call that the stretch-shortening cycle. So it's stretching, shortening. If we're just going over and over and over and over and over again, that's more likely to stress out a tendon. So I often see patients come through the clinic, not runners, but they come in with, rotator cuff tendinopathies, and I ask what they've been doing. Oh, I've been trying to do 100 push-ups every day. And I'm just like, no, you can do push-ups. We just have to break this down. We need to make it slow and we need to make it heavy. That's what's going to keep your tendon happy. But if you're doing lots of repetition, you're just performing what you already are with running, and we don't want that.
Side plank with leg raise. What is it?
So I love this exercise. It's a good, again, bang for your buck exercise. We're working lots of muscle groups. Essentially, I want patients to get in a plank position, a side plank position. So that's where your elbow is underneath your shoulder, which is in line with your hip, which is in line with your knee. Now, I get patients to bend the bottom knee, and runners, and lift the hips up while the top leg is still nice and long. So this is the side plank position, but the bottom leg is bent. From here, on the top leg, we turn the toe down and then slowly raise the leg up. Now, you don't need to go that high, perhaps in line with your hip or even slightly higher. In this position, both glute medius are working, so both your hip stabilizers, as well as your core muscles, so obliques, as well as some of your shoulder stabilizers. It's really hard. 10 to 12 reps is enough for most people. If you do it with good form, and once again, the slow tempo is key here. Turning that top toe down just elicits more glute medius, which is what we want.
How do people do it poorly?
A common one I see is where their hips are too far back when they go to lift up into the planks. They're on a kind of funny angle from their shoulder to their hip, then back to the knee. Second common mistake is doing the exercise too quickly. Third common mistake is not turning that top toe down.
All right, and workout example?
So a workout with this one, because you're working both glute medius in this plank position, as you abduct or raise that top leg, you're bottom glute is stabilizing, the top one is moving. So they're both being fatigued in the first set. So I usually say 10 to 12 reps, and then you need to rest at least 30 seconds before changing sides to perform the 10 to 12 reps on the other side. And I would say two sets of 10 to 12 each per side, but ensuring you're resting from side A to side B. Does that make sense?
No, it makes a lot of sense. Yep. And to be honest, that whole toe turn down thing, you did that with me when we were filming in the park. Oh my God.
Yes.
And I was like, I literally like, it felt like I was frozen. I was like, I can't do this. Like, this is how you were like, this is
Yeah, runners are always trying to feel your glutes. This is one where you can really feel your glutes. And if you can't, that's where you're not doing the exercise right.
Yeah. All right, so went over a lot today, and while this is kind of like a really good foundation, I call it basic strength exercises, we went through three leg exercises that you think are pretty important. Body weight only, no gym required. Mm-hmm. One arm push-up, which is very, say not comprehensive. It's a compound, right?
Mm, yeah,
the push-up compound.
Yeah,
so meaning that you work a lot of different muscles. Mm-hmm. It's a push exercise, obviously. We did not go over the pull exercise because there is no pull. It's very hard to pull without weight. You need some sort of resistance or a band or weight. And the side plank knee with leg raise. Do you have anything to add or say to anyone to end this?
Not much. I think can't go wrong with getting strong.
Boom!
Thanks for watching and listening this far. To end this episode, we've got a bit of a quick bonus section that gets into more of the history of why Sam got into running and came out with her app, 10 Weeks to Strength, 10W2S. This is on the podcast only, so if you aren't listening, go check it out at the link below. Enjoy.
All right, Sam, tell me about your first run. When was it? Where were you? And how did it make you feel?
It was probably part of school somewhere, like I imagine probably running from school to the rowing boat sheds, and I hated it.
Is school high school or?
No, maybe year seven.
And you hated it?
I hated it.
It made you feel like you hated it.
Yeah, the words cross country to me was like, ugh, like why does anyone want to do that?
Yeah.
It also doesn't help. They made us run in our rowing zoot suits, and my school was purple, so they make us run in the street in our purple rowing zoot suits. And again, that further increased my dislike for running any kind of long distance.
Well, then the follow-up question would be, how did you get back into running and why'd you create an app for runners?
Yeah, so my two sports growing up were rowing and ski racing.
Oh, okay, ski racing.
Yeah, I always found I was more of a power type athlete. Like I loved sprints, like 100 meters, great, 200 meters, okay. And as the distance increases, the worse I got.
Yeah.
I rode for a long time, like 14 years, and we started to incorporate more and more running as part of our cross training where I didn't mind it so much by this stage. When I finished up with rowing, there's obviously a massive exercise void in my life. So I started to run more. And classically, knee pain, hip pain, I was like, what's this? Like my body's not built for running. And I went to the physio at the time because I wasn't studying it yet. And they're like, oh, you have great glutes. I was like, what are you talking about? I can squat this heavy. Like I think it's my strongest asset. But essentially, I'd been sitting in a boat that whole time. You don't use your hip stabilizers at all. So you take me out of the boat and get me running more and a lot of single leg strength. I just wasn't up for it. So had a couple of injuries and then got over them and kind of just ran here and there in Melbourne. I then moved to Sydney and I feel like that's when I quite got into running. So that's 2016. So as with anyone here, we've got a race called the City to Surf. I think it's one of the largest fun runs in the world. We get up to 80,000 people doing it. So it's a classic event to do in Sydney. It's 14 kilometres. So for me, being a non-kind of distance athlete, I was like, right, this is a good way to start building some Ks up. So I started following a training program and did the City to Surf. It was so much fun. It is such a fun event. Mm-hmm. It's just the whole Bondi Beach at the end is so vibrant. And of course, I caught the running bug. So thinking about, okay, what's my next move? I was like, well, a half marathon's only, six or more so Ks beyond this, so why don't I train for one next year? I, by this stage, was now in physio school, and I mentioned to a friend that I want to train for Sydney Morning Herald half, and she's like, oh, I'm doing it too. Like, my boyfriend's writing me a training program. He's a running coach here in Sydney. So I was like, right, like, let's follow this training program together and do the run together. And through, again, her boyfriend, we then came across a running club. And that, again, is a massive move because it turns running from being a solo sport to, I guess, more of a team camaraderie. So I was really enjoying that. Did the Sydney Morning Herald half marathon, loved it, and then continued to do quite a few more halves after that and one marathon. how I got further into running, and building the app, again, it's always been something I've been enjoying doing. And it was the very first lockdown of 2020 in March. And like everyone else, I was getting out, going for a run, coming back home. And I was following, you know, a few different exercises on an app simply as something fun to do. And I was kind of like, huh, I was like, this isn't a bad idea for runners. Something essentially quick and easy to do. I know a lot of runners don't have time for their strength. So this is something that could facilitate their training. And I searched the app store, strength training for runners, and there was nothing there. Mm. And I was like, that's massive. Since then, lots of, you know, things here popped up here and there, but I'm so glad I went with this, because through doing it too, it's just got me honed in on all the running related research and running as a niche. And I love it. You can just go so depth with the research and what's available. And I'm a bit of a nerd. So I love both running, the enjoyment it brings, how it's accessible to everyone. And then I love diving into the deep stuff. So that's how I ended up. And yeah, I've come a long way. Like, it's never been something, as I mentioned, easy for me. I feel like I was always more of that sprint athlete, but I've learned to love that, get the runners high from those, you know, long cruisy runs, and it, you know, nothing beats it sometimes.
You've made it to the end. Thank you so much for listening to all this stuff on how we try to make running and training and life and all that stuff work. Because time is a resource that no one can make more of, not yet at least. So we appreciate you taking the time out of your day to listen, watch, and generally consume all this stuff. Accessibility is pretty cool nowadays, so we have a transcript for all the episodes. Make sure you go to the show notes section of this episode on whatever podcast player you're listening to, or you can go to the description of the YouTube video, or just go to podcast.dlakecreates.com to find the episode and the transcript. All of this was produced in Sydney, Australia, so I acknowledge the Gadigal of the Eora Nation, who are the traditional custodians of the land. I pay my respects to elders, past, present, and emerging. A lot of people ask how they can support us, and I think the easiest way is to just share this out to people you know that would like this. So whether it's a podcast link from Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever you're listening to, or watching on YouTube, send them a link. Just flick it to them, email it, text it, you know, Instagram, whatever. Send them a link of my this episode or my newsletter or whatever you can, the YouTube link, whatever you can. The second easiest way is to rate, like, or subscribe to this podcast and or video on YouTube, or even subscribe to my newsletter. If you have any feedback, feel free to hit me up. talk@dlakecreates.com. That's talk@dlakecreates.com. Spelled the normal way. Train smart, race, and live easy. Peace.